Welcome to Ag Matters, covering the positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust.
All right. Well, joining me online this morning for Ag Matters Radio is Gabriel and Allison of Far North Fungi. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us. Allison actually can't make it, so it's just me.
Okay, perfect. That makes things easier then. Gabriel, I always like to start the show by asking my guests to tell us a little about themselves and their connection to Alaska and subsequently their connection to agriculture. So what got you into this?
Well, I grew up in Alaska. I went to Chugiak High School and graduated in 2008. And after high school, I was a commercial fisherman and ski bum for about 3 years. And in the process of doing that, I learned about mushrooms through the Bioneers Conference, a talk by Paul Stamets specifically. And I'd kind of worked a few odd jobs in agriculture before, but this seemed to be mushroom growing, ironically enough, kind of combined kind of similar types to agriculture, like the straw and hay that I had done, and the commercial fishing.
Okay.
In terms of, yeah.
So you didn't grow up always wanting to be a mushroom farmer then?
No, not at all. I didn't even like mushrooms growing up, actually.
Okay, that was going to be my next question.
Yeah, no, definitely not one of those, the mushroom people initially. But yeah, kind of tried, kind of learned a little bit more about the mushroom industry and kind of figured out that about 90 to 95% of the American mushrooms that are grown in the U.S. are grown on manure, and they're all actually one species, the agaricus species.
So okay.
That's portobello, button mushrooms, and they're all actually almost exclusively coming out of Pennsylvania. There's actually one county in Pennsylvania that produces, I think, 70% of the American mushroom supply.
So. Wow.
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting industry, but so we grow kind of more Japanese and Asian style mushrooms,
okay.
which they don't grow on manure necessarily. They grow on either any sort of really organic waste or hardwood trees specifically.
Okay.
And so. Yeah.
So
yeah.
We'll get into some of those details, Gabriel. But when you got so, what year did Far North Fungi get started?
So we started the business about a year ago.
Okay.
It had kind of been a work in progress for the previous 4 to 5 years in terms of just kind of slowly going from the hobby stage. And then about 4 years ago now, I built like an insulated shed in my backyard that was about 165 square feet for an insulated kind of year-round grow space as a prototype for the business. But then we kind of rapidly, that got online in the very beginning of 2017. And then we quickly realized that if we wanted to do the South Anchorage market, which we'd been accepted to, that the 15 pounds a week that we were producing out of the little shed was not going to cut it
at all.
Not enough. So, yeah, we rented a warehouse in town here that's like 2,500 square feet.
Okay.
And so we've been kind of over the last 6 months or so getting kind of scaled into our space there and figuring out some of the bottlenecks that we had for production that were preventing us from doing a lot of the other really cool species, specifically that grow on sawdust.
Okay.
And not just the oyster mushroom that we are currently growing, which we're doing on straw.
Okay. So I just have a gazillion questions running through my head, and I know I'm not going to get to them all. So let's start with some of the basics. If folks want to learn more specifically about your business and how they can get their hands on your mushrooms, where can they find more information?
So we have a website, farnorthfungi.com, and that kind of has an overview, talks about how Allison and I met. We actually met at a mushroom cultivation seminar. She's originally from Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
And so we kind of met through our love of mushrooms, and it was nice to see someone who was kind of young, and I was pleasantly surprised. She was a very young, attractive girl, and so that was nice. Definitely a lot of other folks that we had met were kind of you know, already really into gardening and stuff, but we're kind of, you know, more of my parents' age.
Sure.
And so that was really cool. There's there is quite a few kind of young people coming up in the mushroom industry, and specifically that knowledge is getting passed down, which is good to see.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have a website. I see that you guys are also on social media, right?
Yep. We have a Facebook page, and then we are at the Sears Mall in the winter on Thursdays from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Okay. And is that the only is that the only venue that folks can get your mushrooms right now?
Yeah, pretty much in terms of our direct retailing. We also have been working with the Alaska Food Network as well.
Okay.
And we've been talking with Full Circle, although we haven't started supplying them yet.
Okay.
So some of the local CSAs, and then the Arctic Harvest CSA, Kyla Byers.
Oh, perfect.
CSA as well.
I was going to mention that. What about Kyla?
yeah. No, Kyla's been great.
Good.
And, yeah, so that's been really nice to kind of help us get the mushrooms out, considering it's just the two of us running it. Definitely sales and production are both kind of full-time affairs, so it's really nice to have people who are already kind of doing that kind of stuff, and that we can kind of just plug in with them, just like Kyla. So
absolutely. And yeah. So you plan to be at South Anchorage Farmers Market this summer?
Yep, definitely.
Very good, very good.
Yeah.
All right. So if you're just joining us on Ag Matters Radio this morning, I'm your host, Amy Pettit. And this morning we're talking mushrooms with Gabriel of Far North Fungi. Okay. So my first question, you mentioned blue oyster mushrooms, correct?
Yep.
Okay. And so, but you're experimenting or hoping to expand into to other varieties?
Yeah. So the oyster mushroom and the blue oyster mushroom, they're kind of unique of the Asian grown mushrooms that do grow on hardwood trees, in that they're so aggressive that you can really feed them any sort of organic waste. If it has a lot of cellulose in it, they will consume it. So that's going to include anything from straw to cardboard to used coffee grounds, you know, elsewhere where there's other, you know, any sort of agricultural waste product really will work for them. So we're able to grow them on barley straw that's grown in the valley.
Okay.
And that works really well. And the nice thing about the oyster mushrooms is for the straw, you only have to pasteurize the material to kind of clean it. Whereas
okay.
for wood and sawdust, you actually have to fully autoclave and sterilize them. So
yeah.
it's a lot more intensive, both energy intensive, and your setup has to be significantly capable of, you know, holding PSI, which for the sterilizing, and that just makes it very difficult, in terms of scaling up. There's a lot of kind of home style canners and stuff like that. And then there's some really massive kind of large farm style, but kind of figuring out that autoclave situation has been the bottleneck for us thus far in terms of producing species. But, think we've got a workaround now, and so we've been ramping up in our lab to get ready for expanding into lion's mane. I don't know if you've heard of that mushroom.
I've heard of it. Paint a picture for me, though. What does it look like?
So it's a very odd-looking mushroom. You would, if you saw it, just a photo of it, it would almost look more like a coral. It looks like a white pom-pom.
Okay,
And it's called it's a member of the tooth fungus. So instead of having the familiar gills underneath the cap.
Mm-hmm.
One, there is really no visible cap. It's actually just a mass that has all these little icicles essentially running off of it, and it's just bright white. It's a beautiful mushroom. And one of the things about that one is the shelf life is not long enough for growers down south to get them up here and fresh.
Oh, okay.
And they're a fairly rare mushroom. And so that's kind of the niche that we're zeroing in on, is the mushrooms that, you know, kind of have a lot of culinary appeal or medicinal, and that don't have a shelf life that can kind of prevent customers up here from being able to get them.
Yeah, so products that Alaskans aren't used to seeing.
Exactly, and that was, you know, very, very true for me growing up here. I didn't harvest any wild mushrooms, and so really all I had access to was what was in the grocery store, and to me, I didn't like the flavor of those, and I didn't like the texture too much, and so I never really acquired a taste, and I kind of assumed that all mushrooms would taste the same, where kind of after learning a little bit about it, one of the kind of facts that kind of blew me away was that fungi specifically, not only mushrooms, but fungi in general, outnumber plants around 10 to 1. So there's a lot of variety out there, and amongst edible mushrooms, there's quite a bit of variety in terms of that. So the flavor, it varies quite a bit. And that's just something that I don't think, you know, I wasn't familiar with growing up. And I think a lot of other people who, we've interacted with have kind of said the same after trying the oyster mushroom, that it was a very different flavor than kind of what they had expected.
Absolutely. When you're at farmer's market, do you get a lot of people that, you know, are walk by and they say, oh, I don't like mushrooms? And then if you're like, just try it, this is different. Fresh mushrooms, I would say, are so much different than those. I mean, the stuff at the grocery store has to be so old just to have gotten here, the transport, et cetera.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. One thing we figured out that a lot of the specialty mushrooms in Fred Meyer and Kars are coming from South Korea, because not even domestic production to supply that from down south. So, yeah, it's definitely, I mean, they're probably, I'm not sure exactly how old they are, but maybe a week or so, which is definitely kind of the limit of the shelf life of these mushrooms.
Absolutely. They'd be super dehydrated and just not the same thing. So I would encourage folks that if you haven't tried a fresh local mushroom, to give it a chance, because it will not be the same experience as those mushrooms you get at the grocery store.
Definitely. Definitely. That's certainly been my experience.
Yeah. So another question that's rolling around in my head, in my former life at the Division of Agriculture, I was responsible for a number of grant programs, and we funded a couple of mushroom projects in, let's see, the late 2000s, I guess, maybe around 2010 or anyway, I'm just curious if you were inspired by, because there were a couple mushroom companies in existence before you guys came along. And I'm just wondering if you worked with them or were inspired by them or learned from them, et cetera.
Yeah. Dan Bill Yu, they were Northern Lights Mushroom down on the Kenai.
Yep.
And, Dan, actually, I'm when I was first interested in kind of potentially doing this commercially, I had contacted Dan, and he gave me a full tour of his facility down on the Kenai and talked about, you know, kind of what some of the problems that he'd run into, kind of scaling from the home style up into a small commercial scale. And he was just super friendly. I mean, that experience was really just super positive for me, just not having anyone else really local.
Sure.
I have heard of a small operation up in Fairbanks.
Yeah, yep.
Golden Umbrella Mushrooms or Golden...
Okay.
I'm spacing on the name of it. And then I've heard kind of rumors of other people starting. I know that there's a professor, Philippe Amislavsky, at UAA, and he had kind of played around with the idea, but he's very much more into research.
Right.
And so he does fungal research on insulation. And I think he kind of just ultimately decided that it was just too tangential to kind of his interests.
Okay.
He did play around with it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. He released a report actually on kind of the potential of a mushroom business here in town. And so he was really supportive. We met him at the Girdwood Fungus Fair a few years ago.
Oh, perfect.
We've really enjoyed, and hopefully going to reach out and we'll talk to him in the future, maybe about partnering when we get a little bit more capable of doing some research.
Okay, very good. So another thought that's coming to mind is describe to listeners and to me what the production facility looks like, because I have this thought in my mind that to produce mushrooms, it needs to be like cold and damp and dark. Is that
right.
Accurate?
Well, so not exactly. The cold and the damp, for us, yes, definitely. The blue oyster mushroom is a variety of oyster mushroom that can produce fruiting bodies down to 55 degrees.
Okay.
And so that's really nice for us. We don't have to fight the environment quite so much. Because one of the things really that's very important for growing mushrooms is air exchanges.
Okay.
And so we have to turn over the air in our grow room about 6 times an hour.
Oh, wow.
And so if we were trying to keep it, you know, 70, 75 degrees, 80 degrees that some mushrooms need, specifically the tropical ones, it would just be totally...
That would cost a lot more money.
It wouldn't be viable. Yeah, it wouldn't work. But hopefully in the summer, we're going to be able to branch out using just kind of, you know, some of the solar heating and maybe getting a hoop house that will allow us to kind of extend that into... But in general, what we have is the warehouse has a greenhouse inside of it.
Okay.
Just to build up the humidity to 80 to 100%. And then essentially they do like light. The kind of idea that mushrooms like the dark, I think mainly comes from the domestication of fungi in Europe in the 17th century. They made use of limestone caves in France.
Okay.
And so one of the things is, and different types of mushrooms require different kind of light.
Okay.
In terms of, but essentially they use it as a trigger to tell them that they have reached the surface of whatever they're growing on.
Oh.
And they use the combination of fresh air, humidity, and the light to actually induce the mushroom formation.
Okay. So that's what says, hey, it's time to grow. We're where we need to be.
Exactly. So, okay. Yeah, so we have lights in there, but they're not special. We don't have to have anything like hydroponic grows or anything like that where you have some really, you know, very intense lights. We just have normal LED full-spectrum bulbs.
Okay, very good. So if you're just joining us, one more reminder that this is Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and this morning we're talking mushrooms, and I have learned so much in our first couple of segments, Gabriel, and just so you know, our time is about two-thirds of the way up already. This half hour just buzzes right by, and I'd love to give you the lead here for a minute and tell us something unique or something that you wanted to be sure and share with us this morning on the radio about your business. And if you don't have something that you want to throw out there, I have 10 more questions. So.
Oh, no. Well, so the other thing is we've also branched into kind of the more medicinal mushrooms.
Okay.
Because as it turns out, a lot of the Asian-grown mushrooms, they have a lot of medicinal value. For instance, like the blue oyster that we grow is actually, it has around 3% of the dry weight is lovastatin, which is the active ingredient in cholesterol medication.
Oh.
And... so that's just kind of one of the fun things about the one that we're currently growing, which the oyster is not as medicinal as some of the other mushrooms. Turkey tail and lion's mane actually is quite medicinal. And so we're starting to do, and so we've branched into kind of doing some medicinal mushrooms. The most recognizable one for folks would probably be chaga.
Sure.
And so that one... Yeah, we haven't been growing yet, but we will actually be growing the chaga mycelium. But that's a medicinal mushroom that's just, it's got a lot of antioxidants in it and has been documented to soak up free radicals.
Okay.
And so we're going to be adding that as well as starting to grow it and then doing kind of mushroom tinctures and stuff like that. So we're going to be having a medicinal mushroom workshop at our facility on January 27th from 10 a.m. to 12.
Okay.
And so that's going to be essentially talking through how you make mushroom extractions, what the point of making extractions is, the benefits, and then kind of what mushrooms you can make tinctures and stuff off of.
Very good. So can folks find more information about that on your website or social media about that workshop?
Yep. We're posting that stuff up here today.
Okay, so. Very good. And I did notice when I was cruising around your Facebook page that you host other workshops as well, right? Growing for folks that are interested in growing their own mushrooms.
Yeah, we've had two workshops thus far at the facility where people got to make essentially mini versions of our oyster straw log, which is essentially just a plastic tube filled with straw with holes poked for the mushroom to breathe out of, and it'll produce mushrooms in about a month. So we've done two of those, and then I think we're planning for February to do a lion's mane, how to grow lion's mane, and people will get to take home kits for that.
Wow.
And then I think in March we're going to be doing potentially shiitake logs.
Wow. Okay. So folks should, you know, stay tuned to your website and social media if they're interested in some of these workshops that you guys are doing. That's incredible. I'm just really fascinated by you sound like such an expert, like you just know all the things about the mushrooms. And I'm super curious, like, did you go outside? Did you go to mushroom conferences in the lower 48, or where did you gather all of this information?
Yeah. So me and my partner actually met at the second of Paul Stamets's mushroom seminars, which are like 4-day long intensives down at his farm in Washington.
Okay.
And so those are really helpful, especially when you have a limited number of kind of growers around you.
Sure.
to help kind of see what that looks like at scale.
Yeah.
And then I've always, like, both my parents are biologists. They both came to Alaska to do field work and, you know, kind of work with the outdoors. And so that was, I was definitely raised with that kind of overall mentality.
Yeah.
But the mushroom growing kind of, yeah, it came about 5 to 6 years ago is when I first kind of heard about it, and then have been kind of obsessively focusing on it since then. And I also had the opportunity through school to actually work for USGS in their ecology lab here on the APU campus.
Oh, okay.
And so that was doing like genetics work. And so that gave me a lot of the skills necessary, because ironically enough, the beginning half of mushroom growing is all done in a sterile environment. And
right.
So our facility, we have our grow room, which I explained earlier, and then we have our lab, which is all very clean. And the goal there is to just not have any spores, foreign spores or anything. So you're just getting the mushroom that you want to grow out.
Yeah. So, Gabriel, if you could use a magic ball and look 5 years in the future, what are your hopes for Far North Fungi and the future of your business?
Well, I would love to get to the scale where we can supply grocery stores and really kind of meet the needs for Alaska in terms of specialty mushrooms.
Yeah.
And I spoke with Fred Meyer at one point, and they said for oyster mushrooms, they might take around 150 pounds a week per large location.
Wow.
And so that's about what we're producing totally right now. So certainly have our work cut out for us, but that we view as there's no reason why, you know, with the limits of mushrooms in terms of selling them fresh, there's really no reason why we shouldn't be able to scale to that point.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of other research that we're looking at in terms of, you know, something like the potential of what Philippe is doing at UAA with the insulation. There's a lot of really cool stuff like that. There's a company in San Francisco that's doing leather, and they actually make something that's equivalent to deer hide leather out of mushrooms.
Really?
Yeah. And it's really, I mean, it's one of the things that really attracted me to it was just the way the mushrooms grow, them being just essentially they're almost like a manufacturing process of breaking down and knitting together.
Yeah.
And so you can really use that for all sorts of things.
I remember with Philippe's project, he was, there was the insulation factor. And then if I'm remembering correctly, there was also this idea that you could make, like clamshells that products come in, that you could make that instead of using plastic and, you know, an oil-based product, that you could use the mushroom fibers to create recyclable, you know, containers and things like this with mushrooms.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's really incredible. And, I mean, what he's doing is just really, really cool. And I think has a lot of potential, up here, just in terms of, you know, like the amount of, even if you were to display something like those styrofoam fish coolers for people sending fish down south.
Sure.
It seems to make a lot of sense to do it out of something that when it reaches its end kind of final location, if it's a non-permanent product like packaging or something,
yeah,
you just have that be made from something that will just add to the soil wherever it ends up, rather than potentially polluting the ocean or something.
Right.
The very purpose of sending, you know, our fish and stuff. So
yeah.
So I think we're, you know, Alice and I, the where we met was actually using mushrooms as biofilters to break down toxins and hyperaccumulate heavy metals.
Okay.
And so really, for us, the food point is just a jumping off point.
Yeah.
Like we're right now, it's occupying all of our time, but in the future, we'd really like to be able to offer, you know, if a gas station gets contaminated, that the oyster mushroom's been found to actually break down hydrocarbons. And so that kind of what we're working on now is actually adding in not only to the growing, but at the end stage of the process, our spent mushroom columns is actually using those to then biodegrade some sort of pollutant in, you know, our local area. And so we've been working with a professor on that a little bit.
That's fascinating. The things you don't know about mushrooms, all those people out there that just think, oh, I don't like to eat mushrooms. Well, now you know all these different uses and things that mushrooms can do.
Right.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
So we're just about out of time, Gabriel. And I whenever I have a food business on air, I love to challenge the person by asking about their favorite way to eat said product or favorite recipe. So are you a mushroom eater? Do you consume mushrooms like three times a day?
I have been converted after growing them myself. For the oyster mushroom that we grow, my personal favorite is just a little bit of olive oil, garlic, throw in some onion, and then the mushroom right away, and then just cook all of those until they kind of caramelize, and finish it off with just salt and pepper. It's a really mild, sweet mushroom, so you can really do anything you want with it, stir fries. You know, it's really popular in Japan and China, but I kind of go back to my Italian roots, and it just works beautifully with that as well. So really, the sky's the limit with the oyster mushroom, but keeping it simple is kind of my advice in terms of just a little bit of oil or fat, because mushrooms have around 30% protein and no fats. So it's like the leanest meat ever. So that's kind of the best thing to keep in mind.
I actually knew a woman in college that she ate raw mushrooms every day. And I was like, what is the deal? And she was like, did you know mushrooms have protein? And I was like, what? I'll eat beef. Thank you very much. But I've been converted as well. I'm a huge mushroom fan. But
yeah.
Well, Gabriel, I so look forward to coming and finding you guys at the farmer's market. You said on Thursdays and Saturdays, you're at the Sears Mall Farmer's Market. And I encourage folks to come try the Far North Fungi products. And thank you so much for being a guest on Ag Matters Radio this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too.
You've been listening to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit, of the Alaska Farmland Trust. Ag Matters is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. For more information about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.